This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I can see them Hawks, baby.
Yeah, he was an important Hawk in those late 80s, early 90s teams. Nasty. 1-2 from the middle, knocked out as always. Well, the Pacers have looked sharp against the Bulls so far this year. They've won the first three. And they'll meet again at the United Center next week.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mully out today. We are talking Bulls. Thank you to CHSN for that highlight from yesterday's Bulls loss to the Pacers, 127-112, down in Indianapolis. Brings us to our next guest, who joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Cam Smith is my colleague at the Chicago Sports Network on the Chicago Lead, as well as a contributor to Bulls Countdown Live. And here on the Score, you'll hear him on BetMGM Network talking all things betting. He's a man of many talents. Cam joins us right now. How's it going, Cam?
David, what's up, man? I appreciate you having me on this morning with your listeners. So it's going to be another good conversation. You know how we get down when we talk Bulls, especially.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah, you know, the whole thing with Io was, I don't want to say a surprise, but a disappointment. He had been a guy that we've been talking about, Cam, had accepted the direction that Billy Donovan wanted to take the offense, embraced it, and was what he was referred to as the catalyst. And now he's down with the shoulder surgery. How much of the fact that this rest of the season is not necessarily about wins and losses do you think accelerated the surgery date?
You know what? I think it really, when you put it in perspective of obviously where the Bulls are, and this still could be a team I'm sure we're going to talk about at some point, that could make the play-in. I mean, they're two games up on the Brooklyn Nets, 3.5 games up on the Philadelphia 76ers. So it's an interesting point for them where they are. But you look at this group, and we've heard Arturs Karnišević talk about this when he addressed the media after the trade deadline in terms of how he thought it would be a positive for this young group to possibly get the experience of a play-in while still being in position to be in that lottery and getting a high draft pick. But I think the situation with Io was necessary. It was needed to shut him down in terms of where this team is going and what they want to do. I think obviously they have about 50 guards on the roster, so it opens up more opportunity for guys like Trey Jones, Kevin Herter. Josh Giddey has been playing great basketball, but still in terms of those guys that just came over from that three-team deal with the Kings and the Spurs. So Io is one of those guys. It's you can't replace him with this roster. You won't be able to because he's that good on both ends of the floor, and you just lost your best downhill player on this Bulls roster. So it's a tough reality for him right now because this is a guy that was experiencing career highs when it comes to his points, rebounds, and assists. But you think about just the big picture, right? And was it necessary for him to continue playing with that shoulder injury and doing that game on Friday night and watching him in that situation against the Toronto Raptors, a team that's going to be very attacking when it comes to just on the ball and downhill? You don't want that with Io. And he was just favoring that shoulder as well. So it's the right decision. But in the grand scheme of things, it was the best decision for what this franchise is with about 21 games left and looking with the rest of their schedule. You don't want anything continuously happening with that shoulder with Io. You shut him down, you get the surgery, you have him prepared for next season.
You were working Friday night with Jason Goff on the pre and post game on CHSN when Coby White sent the game into overtime, essentially, with a four-point play, I think, with 6 seconds to go. And then they win the game in overtime, and they beat the Raptors. And I'm just curious, that was the essential Bulls, the microcosm of the conflict all Bulls fans, I think, must feel this year, because you mentioned the fact that, okay, yeah, they're in 10th place in the Eastern Conference, And right now, they're in the play-in because they're two games ahead of the 76ers, and this puts them in the quasi-postseason, but they're in the play-in round. And then on the other hand, that you may lead with that, but someone else will say, well, that's not the standings to pay attention to. They're number eight. They're in eighth place in the Tankathon.com standings because of that's where they are paying and putting all of their focus because that's what they care about the most, the draft positioning. How awkward is that to constantly evaluate a team game by game, week by week, knowing that there are kind of conflicting interests here?
Yeah, that's the difficult thing with this entire roster, this coaching staff, and really the front office. And the great example was Friday night, as you mentioned, with the Toronto Raptors, right? I mean, Emmanuel quickly created that situation for the Bulls. I mean, they were down four, right? That game was signed, sealed, delivered. The Bulls have battled back, and it's a credit to them because it also keeps the trueness and ability in life of when it comes to this front office not trying to compromise the integrity of the game. We've heard that time and time again, that they're not going to tank, and NBA teams hate using that word. They try and shy away from it. So the Bulls are going with, you know, we're going to try and keep the integrity of the game there and positive. But Emmanuel quickly decided to file Kobe White, and it's like, for the Bulls, it's just like, well, all right, well, we're in this position. Let's just go ahead and get it done. And so that's them being competitors, but then also, too, you can't fault them for just stepping up and just saying, hey, all right, well, the game is there. Let's go ahead and take it. Now, obviously, yesterday was a different situation against the Indiana Pacers, and this team is top six, I believe fifth right now in the Eastern Conference standings, where they're just going to take care of business, and they're not going to mess around with you. But it's the conflicting thing game by game, David, where you have a remaining strength of schedule that's 14th in the NBA. You have a mix of so many different guys that you're trying to get minutes to because they're trying to showcase what they're doing. But then also you're trying to have yourself in a position to get one of those top draft picks. And it's not, if you're not in the top five, you won't get a good guy. I think if you're in the lottery, you will get a good guy because his draft class, as we've heard time and time again, is very good. So it's the conflicting thing that this team continues to find themselves in. I think at the end of the day, it will measure out in terms of the opponents that they go against, because if you look at the remaining schedule, a lot of their opponents are either right in the playoffs, top six in their respective conference, or right there in the play-in. And these teams are going to try and continue to keep their spot where they are or try and improve their spot. So when you look at the roster and the rotation that Billy Donovan has to put out there on the court, they're not going to be able to maintain and keep up with a lot of these teams that are playoff-focused and ready to get their guys going.
Talking with Cam Smith from CHSN here on the Mully and Haas Show. Mully out today, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. So, Cam, since they made the trade of Zach LaVine to Sacramento and they get back the guys that they got back, I think that Zach Collins and Kevin Huerter and Trey Jones have been very interesting to watch play together. And I think it's been, when you take Vooch out of the equation as well as they have the last couple games, Zach Collins is playing like the guy who is justifying his draft status all those years ago with a lottery pick, essentially 10th overall, I believe. And Trey Jones has got some pace, and you see Huerter, he had the Kevin Huerter game, for goodness sakes, and he hit seven threes. I just wonder, how would you compare or describe the way that they have played since the trade? At times it looks like they fit in seamlessly, and it looks like, are they better? I think that's even absurd to maybe even ask, but at times they have played better.
Yeah, they've played better, but they're not better. I think when you have Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic out on that floor, this is a different team. And they showed that throughout the season at points. But to where you were going, David, with Zach Collins and Kevin Huerter and Trey Jones, at the end of the day, these guys are pros. These aren't like third or fourth year guys in the league. They understand how to get themselves going and really how to just adapt to situations. I mean, these are guys that have played for multiple teams, and so they understand how to really thrive in their role. And Zach Collins is the perfect example of that, with Vooch being out with that calf injury. But you look at the guys, two triple doubles in two of his last three games. So in that flow of offense, and he's stretching out his shot even more in terms of from three, even though he was a guy that, you know, we saw against the Toronto Raptors was 0-for-4, but turned that around against the Pacers yesterday going 2-for-5. He's just a guy that understands that I'm going to bring physicality I'm going to play within a system. But also, if you throw the ball into me, or if I'm going to go pick and dive, I can catch and make a play for myself at the rim. So I really like Zach Collins. I think he's a guy that is a keeper for this roster off the bench. I think Kevin Herter is the same thing, because you always need shooting in the NBA. It doesn't matter if you're the Washington Wizards or if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder or Cleveland Cavaliers. You always need guys that can shoot the ball. And so I know Kevin Herter had his struggles the past couple of seasons from three, but we've seen signs, especially the last few games for him, or four games, I should say, in terms of what he is in the NBA. And he's a guy that can knock down shots in multiple areas of the court. So Trey Jones, when you throw him and factor him in, it'll be interesting to see what the Bulls do with him this upcoming offseason, if they can involve him in a trade package or try and keep him on this roster. But again, this is a team that has, it feels like I'm exaggerating, but it's 50 guards. But when you look at the entirety of these groups, like Lonzo, Ayo Dosunmu, Kobe White, Josh Giddey, Trey Jones, Kevin Herter, like these are guys Javon Carter is going to take his player option this offseason as well. At least that's what we believe he will do at this point of his career. This is a very guard-heavy team. So you're going to have to try and find ways to move off of guys. And I think Trey Jones, the way that he's playing for this team, just makes him even better when it comes to being involved in the trade package this offseason. But you got to tip your hat to these guys. I mean, coming off a different situation where they're involved in a trade and coming to a new city, a new organization, a new culture, a new style of play. And it took them a few games to get themselves going, but they've been able to be productive in their roles and in their time on the court. And that time is going to be elevated even more, obviously, with Ayo being done for the season.
One of those guys who's in a crowded backcourt is Josh Giddey. His numbers have been impressive since the trade. I know he went the stint and had the streak of the double-doubles and 20-plus points. And I know we maybe differ a little bit on the future or value that he plays on a good Bulls team once they get to be good again. What do you think the future holds for Josh Giddey, and how would you put the last couple weeks, or let's say the month of February, because it was a good month for Josh Giddey in February, in perspective?
Yeah, no, Josh, you got the tippy cap to him. I know Bulls fans are still hurting over that trade for Alex Caruso, of him being traded straight up for one of the better defensive players in the NBA on the perimeter. But this month of February, you have to look at just what he was able to do. I mean, he shot the lights and the leather off the basketball when you look at his number. I mean, 53% from three, David, is what Josh Giddey shot in the month of February. And it wasn't like he was having, you know, attempted two, maybe three attempts. This is a guy that was averaging 5 3-point attempts and was able to knock them down. So I don't know what clicked for him. Maybe it was the absence of at times Lonzo Ball, but also, of course, Zach LaVine, where that conversation occurred with Josh Giddey and Billy Donovan, of saying, hey, you're going to be our guy. We need you to create offense, whether it's for yourself or for the other guys. So just don't think about it. Just go ahead and just play. And we see signs of this where he's not hesitating with a shot, especially on second chance points or second chance opportunities when the Bulls get the offensive rebound and it's kicked back out to him. Josh Giddey's taking threes, or he's taking guys off the bounce to get to the rim. But it makes it very interesting when you get to the offseason. If he continues to play at this level, he's really driving his market value up, and he's a restricted free agent for this Bulls team. So that's the big question for this front office. If Josh Giddey is seeking, we've heard reports of him seeking at least $30 million a year for his next contract, and somewhere in this range of Jalen Suggs for the Orlando Magic, who got a 5-year, $150 million deal. If Josh Giddey is seeking something similar, do you allow him to sign with that team that's going to offer him that? Because there are teams that will offer him that money. If you're the Bulls, do you match it? That's the big question. And when you have that guard group with Lonzo, with Josh Giddey, Ayo, and Kobe White, I think you need stability there at the point guard spot. But it's going to put the Bulls in a very difficult position when it comes to offseason to decide if they want to keep Josh Giddey. But his numbers in February are showing that he's playing great basketball. Now, I know you got to bring some more context to it to show what he was doing before February and the inconsistencies, especially shooting the basketball and turning the basketball over, were there. But it's going to be a difficult decision for this team, especially when you have to make sense of, okay, well, do we continue to double down with the guy that we traded our best defender for in Alex Caruso and give him a big contract and just move it forward with it? So it's Mark Eversley and Arturis Kanishevis have to make a very sound and strong decision on what they want to do with Josh Giddey.
A few more minutes here with Cam Smith from CHSN on the score. All right, everything is about Matas Bezelis moving forward. He will be the foundational piece of this offseason, and every draft pick and free agent signing will be how does he fit in around Matas. If he's that important to the franchise, and everybody knows that he is, why is he not playing down the stretch, Cam? What is it about his game that he's lacking that Billy Donovan doesn't trust him to be in the game in crunch time?
Yeah, you know, the tough thing about Matas is the position that he's guarding. And when you think of crunch time, it's when you need to get those stops, right? When you go back to Friday and how this team was able to just really attack the Toronto Raptors with Giddey, with Io, with Kobe White. Like, these are veteran guys that understand at moments of how to play and how to be in a position to slow guys down. And that was evident, as I mentioned, Friday against the Toronto Raptors. So he's a rookie, David. We know this. And still, I don't care if it's the month of March, he's still a rookie and he's still learning his ways. But again, it's the position that he's guarding. Last night, guarding Pascal Siakam. You know, and you go before that with Scottie Barnes and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Kevin Durant. Like, that position to me is the one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult position or area to guard, and that's that wing slash forward spot, and that's what Matas is in. So I don't think that you look at this and say, well, he's not playing down the stretch or he's not playing in these clutch moments. It's an indictment on Billy Donovan and his team. I think with Billy and what he's been able to do with Matas is give him even more minutes in the month of February. He's averaging 26.8 minutes per game, and so you want that to continue on. I mean, he's going to get his moments where in the clutch, he's going to be in that position. But defensively, especially on the ball, he's not there yet. Off the ball, he's been one of the best in the NBA in terms of blocking shots, getting deflections. But you want to make sure that you have to have him get better at on-ball defending and really rotational defense. And that's something that he's been lacking really all season because he's a rookie, and it's going to take time for him to grow in that area.
Last Bulls question for you. When you look at the Bulls' first-round draft picks on their bench in the rotation now in this final phase of the season, Dalen Terry, Julian Phillips, which one do you have more confidence in terms of upside?
I would say Julian Phillips is where my confidence lies. And I didn't hesitate to answer that because he brings more to the court in comparison to Dalen Terry. And I know Dalen is a guy that energy-wise, defensively can disrupt some things with his length at 6'7". But there's also the other end of the floor where Dalen's shot is not there. There's no consistency there in terms of attacking the rim with athleticism and making plays at the rim. He's not there in comparison to Julian Phillips. The great thing about Julian Phillips that we've seen this season is that coming into the season, he worked on his corner three ball. He's been able to knock it down when he's gotten more minutes out there on the court. So you would lean towards a guy more that is in a position that with his athleticism, his shooting ability, how he can take guys off of the bounce, and really how he moves without the basketball. I think that's one of the things that Julian Phillips has really grown with throughout this season is him cutting off of the ball, right? When he's in that corner, not just staying there, but cutting towards the baseline where he can get those tip dunks or get those dump off passes from Josh Giddey or an attacking guard, 4-2. Defensively is where you want Julian Phillips to get better, especially on the defensive glass. I think that comes when he adds a little more weight to himself and just becomes more confident on that end of the floor. But Julian Phillips for sure is where I'm leaning towards when I look at the comparison of those first-round picks between himself and Dalen Terry.
Great stuff on the Bulls, Cam. Before we let you go, just want to make sure, how are you feeling about your prediction a couple weeks ago that Michigan State would be the Big Ten team to win it all?
Look, David, I'm feeling so good that I put some money down on it. Like, I put money down on Michigan
State
to win it all. Like, I'm that confident that the Spartans are there because they continue to just churn out wins in different ways, man. I mean, this Michigan State team is legitimate. And yesterday was a great example against Wisconsin where you look at this team, David, at every position, starting five and off of the bench, they have depth. They have depth at every position and guys that can play both ends of the floor. And it's Michigan State tradition to have guys that play both ends of the floor that are very tough, that can muck up the game and not have it be a high scoring game. Yesterday was a perfect example of that against Wisconsin. I still believe that with Michigan State, even though if they're not making shots in the tournament, they can force you to play their style of game, which is going to be half court and you have to go through them to win or score a basket. So that's the tough thing about Izzo and that Spartan program. But I'm still riding with Michigan State. I think that, again, this is the year for the Big Ten to break that drought, that 25-year drought of them winning a national championship. And the last team to do that, that was Michigan State with Tom Izzo back in 2000. So I think Sparty runs it back.
I like it. And since your Salukis aren't doing so well, you got to have a team to root for.
Hey, you know what? Sorry. You got to have secondary options, David. Yeah, no, it is what it is. I'm a realist in this thing. My Salukis have been struggling, and so hopefully they can find some magic in the Missouri Valley tournament that's kicking off in a couple of days.
Great stuff, Cam. See you later.
All right. Thanks, David.
Cam Smith from CHSN, my colleague on the Chicago Lead, all things Bulls and basketball. He knows his hoops. He definitely knows his hoops. And if it reference to Southern Illinois and the Salukis, he was a guard on the Southern Illinois team back in the day. Played one season for Matt Painter. It was a really good guard on some good Southern Illinois teams. So definitely knows his hoops. All right. When you come back, we're going to revisit the Blackhawks' big trade over the weekend. Kyle Davidson ships Seth Jones to Florida, gets the goaltender of the future, Spencer Knight, and a first-round draft pick in return. Is this rebuild, one of many going on in town, the right way to go about this? Is this the way that you get back to the playoffs, back in championship contention, bottoming out to start to climb back? We'll talk about it next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Well, take us through the art of this deal. How did it get done tonight?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's a tough deal to make, right? You know, when you're moving not only a great player like Seth, but a big contract in the NHL is something that's difficult to do, but and you want to make sure you're accomplishing things on your end, and we certainly felt we did that today with acquiring Spencer in a first round pick. And so overall, you know, no trade's easy, but you know, I think we landed in a great spot for the organization.
Welcome back to Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mully is out today. Keep listening for your chance to win your way into our Cubs season opener watch and listen party at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be part of a studio audience for the Cubs and Dodgers in Tokyo starting at 5 a.m. March 18th, not that far away, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Stick around for a special broadcast of our show after the conclusion of the Cubs broadcast, all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. That was Kyle Davidson on CHSN on Saturday night. He went on the pregame show with Pat Boyle and Tony Granato to address the big trade that the Blackhawks executed in giving the Florida Panthers Seth Jones and a 2026 fourth-round pick for a conditional first-round pick either this year or next year, and the goalie of the future, the Panthers' backup goalie, Spencer Knight. Spencer Knight is a former first-round draft pick, 13th overall in 2019, I believe. A guy who they believe in Florida helped them win a Stanley Cup title. He's got a ring. He comes from a winning organization. He's joining an organization that needs revitalized, that knows what it's like to win, but has maybe forgotten. It's been a long time. Nonetheless, that trade was one that Kyle Davidson looks pretty good in making. And he retains 25% of the salary. And that is a big number because Seth Jones was making $9.5 million a year. Big contract to unload. Good for Kyle Davidson. I do believe this. Nobody in Florida is going to be complaining about unloading their backup goalie and a first-round draft pick if Seth Jones is part of a Stanley Cup championship team in June. They won't care. This is a win-now move for Florida. You remember what those felt like once upon a time in Chicago when you had teams that were ready to make win-now moves. Cubs might be in that position. Wish they'd make one. But I think that's the point. There's all of this rebuilding going on that I think it's very interesting to step back for 5 seconds. Look away from the tankathon.com standings. Take yourself away from the latest draft projections for guys at the top of your respective drafts, whatever sport you're covering. And take a moment to read Mark Lazarus, good friend and colleague, works for The Athletic, covers the Blackhawks, covers the NHL. really good take on this entire trade in The Athletic this morning. And he compares what the Hawks are doing, which I think everybody understands. This is the way you do it in pro sports. You bottom out and you climb back. And in getting rid of Seth Jones, he's the last residue of the Stan Bowman era. Stan Bowman gave him that big contract, gave him the big money, and Stan Bowman then was no longer part of the organization. He's back with the Edmonton Oilers. That's a different story, and it's irrelevant to this topic. But Mark Lazarus writes about how Kyle Davidson is pretty universally applauded for doing exactly what he set out to do. And I give him a ton of credit. Kyle Davidson is consistent. He's maybe not the best general manager in town or sports executive in Chicago. I still believe that as people get ready to scoff, that title belongs to Jed Hoyer. He is the most proven executive in Chicago, Jed is. Kyle Davidson, though, is completely consistent with his approach. And I know there are people in that organization that respect that. And Kyle Davidson has done exactly what he set out to do. He's traded everybody. He's traded everything. He's had eight first-round draft picks the last three seasons. He's got two more this year, and now two more next year. He's got all the draft picks. He's got all the prospects. When you look at the Hawk organization, they're great at the AHL. They're great at the lower levels. They're great when they talk about their prospects and where they are in the colleges and all those things. They got a guy, Nick Lardis, I believe, who's got 100 points in like 60 games. He's got crazy numbers. Look at Frankie Nazar. He comes up and he's been one of the best rookies in the NHL since January. But they're not winning. And I don't even know if they're close. Connor Bedard is a guy who came into the league, and guys like me referred to him as a generational talent and the best since McDavid. Compared him to Sidney Crosby. And I'll stand by that until it's proven otherwise.
David, who should be on the line? If you were running the team right now, who would you have skating with Bedard?
Bertuzzi and Nazar.
Okay. Because I think that's what we want to know. Like the average hockey fan, like it's not working. How could it get better?
Well, how
it gets better? Is that a future?
How it gets
line?
Better is you get Mitch Marner in a Blackhawk sweater.
Well, there you go. But that's not till next year, maybe.
But this is my point. This is the point I'm trying to get to, is that you can applaud all of these moves as being the right moves according to the 2025 Professional Sports Front Office Handbook. Tank, lose, draft, build, win. The Hawks have done pretty much all of those except for the winning part. And now it's time for the winning part. So what I liked about Mark Lazarus's column in The Athletic is that it asks a fair question. He compares him to the Florida Panthers and Bill Zito, former agent turned brilliant executive. They didn't rebuild or bottom out. They added and supplemented and retooled. They didn't rebuild. And I do wonder if this obsession with bottoming out and all of this, our infatuation with draft picks and draft capital, do you really have to do that? Show me when it's worked. I want more examples of when it's worked, whether it's the NBA or the NHL. Or any, I know we have the Cubs in town to point to. That was 2016, guys. That was 9 years ago. Astros, too. That was before the Cubs. There are examples of it working. And I'm not saying this is going to change the way anybody does the job of rebuilding. But when you look at what the Hawks did to get to this point, the counter to the rebuild and draft and then enjoy sustained success, the Theo Epstein model, being copied by Kyle Davidson here, they traded 23-year-old Alex DeBrincat, 23-year-old Brandon Hagel, 24-year-old Dylan Strome, and they got rid of Patrick Kane. Now, I know it's revisionist history, but Brandon Hagel's a heck of a player. If you remember the Four Nations faceoff, you might have seen him starring for Team Canada. Pretty good. Alex DeBrincat? Oh, yeah, that guy? Scoring goals at will for the Detroit Red Wings. Oh, yeah, he's playing next to Patrick Kane, who's got five or six overtime goals in 97 games with the Red Wings in a red sweater. He looks awful in it, by the way. Kane looks terrible in red, in that red, in that shade of red. Anyway, I'm bitter. Yeah, I'm bitter. Kane should never have been in anything but a Blackhawks sweater. But that may be a different point. Or is it? The point is, I wonder sometimes when you start these rebuilds, do you really have the patience to finish the job? And does your front office have the patience and ownership have the patience to let you? We're seeing it in Chicago with the Blackhawks, in every sport. We're seeing it with the Blackhawks and Kyle Davidson. I think that he is going about this the right way. There's no turning back now. They have reached a point of no return. You don't retool now. Now you've got to add to get the most out of Bedard. You got to make sure that this second season wasn't so much of a trend as much as it is an aberration. So you want to start to get people who are proven NHL players, stars, if you will, and guys like Mitch Marner in free agency. When you make trades like this, they're forced by what Seth Jones said, and this is a great trade for the Blackhawks, in theory. But now you've got to continue down this path. This summer, Mitch Marner's a free agent, go out and sign him. Convince him somehow. Mikko Rantanen, same deal. If he's on the open market, and you can't get one of those two guys, make a trade for someone who is going to make a difference. Connor Bedard needs Robin. He needs a Robin to his Batman. He needs somebody who is a Kane to Taves. He needs that guy. Doesn't have it. No disrespect. Frankie Nazar could eventually be a very good, above average NHL scorer for a long time. But that's not enough. You know, Patrick Sharp was part of that. He could fill that role if you want to compare everything to the dynasty. But I think what's going on with the Blackhawks is going on with the Blackhawks, and we're talking about it today because of the trade they made on Saturday night, a good trade that benefited both teams. But it's also a microcosm of everything that's going on in the city and everything that's going on in pro sports. This commitment to bottoming out. And you just got to look at the White Sox. Same deal. The problem with the White Sox is they bottomed out and they didn't get the benefits of bottoming out because of the draft realities. They can't draft higher than 10th because of the rules changes. But they're bottoming out. Now they have to start to build back up. The Bulls, what are they doing? They haven't quite learned the art of tanking. They flunked it. They flunked tanking because this isn't a really good tank job. This isn't what when we started the season, we were obsessed with saying and repeating that the Bulls needed to pick a lane. They picked a lane, but it was near the trade deadline, almost too late to matter, and it still didn't really make them bad enough to be in the conversation. You know, they got a 6% chance of getting the number one overall pick. And you got people clamoring about how dumb they are because they don't have a 7.5% chance. I mean, think about that for a second. You got people insulting the intelligence of the Chicago Bulls executives because over a 1.5% difference. Come on,
I'm right here, David. I'm right here. I'm one of those people. I'll take every percentage point I can get. Why not? If Kendall Gill was right, and again, Kendall Gill's forgotten more about basketball than I will ever know. I'm fully able to admit that. But imagine if you could get Matas Buzelis and Flagg. Now all of a sudden, you got a chance.
If somebody told you there was a 7.5% chance of rain in the morning, would you bring an umbrella to work?
But I wouldn't bring it if there was a 50% chance. I park in a garage.
I'm just saying.
I mean, is it a bad analogy? I mean, I
guess. No, it's
I
not a bad analogy.
It depends how. Are you walking?
We're talking about the difference between a six
here,
and a
I'll
seven.
Give you,
and
I'll
half,
give you an okay. example. They said there was going to be this snowmageddon a few weeks ago, right? We were all worried about it, right? We were talking about, you know, possibly working from home and making contingency plans. I got the snowblower out of the shed. I've got one of those battery operated ones. So I brought the batteries downstairs, got them all charged up. You barely needed a broom. I could have used the leaf blower to get rid of the snow that we had at the beginning. And so I overreacted. But
you're making
reaction,
my point.
No.
You're making my point.
No, but if I want to capture the flag, I got to get the batteries charged. I got to be ready. I wanted every opportunity to be prepared for Snowmageddon.
You could say that preparing for Snowmageddon, preparing to capture the flag, is an entire overreaction. It's an overreaction because it guarantees you, you know what? Zilcho. Nothing. Nada.
I just feel like after I've watched a decent amount now of college basketball, I'm not going to say I'm an expert by any chance, but I've been like, when Rutgers has been on TV, like I've watched, I don't see like flags up here. And those two guys are like, it's a dropping off of a cliff.
Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper.
It's dropping off of a cliff, in my opinion.
It's crazy, too, that you got the second and the third probably picks, and they're on the same team. That team's not even ranked.
And they're not going to make the tournament.
I know.
They're not even, if the Big Ten got
keep
to
talking.
10 or 11 teams.
Keep talking. You're making my point. Being bad in
then
the
I'm
NBA.
I'm going to stop because I don't want to do that.
Well, you are making my point. It guarantees you nothing.
I understand it guarantees you nothing. Listen,
rooting for losing, I just don't know if it guarantees you enough. Show me some examples. Show me more examples.
Well, here's a situation, though. A good example would be every sport is different. Baseball, I think if you get to the postseason, mm-hmm. see the Arizona Diamondbacks, you've got a chance to make some noise. I don't think when you get to the play-in, even though the East is overall.
You probably don't, not in the NBA.
You're not beating the Cavs.
Miami Heat did a couple years ago.
Yeah, but they had Jimmy, playoff Jimmy. He's a playoff guy. If they were to get, I don't even think they could win a game.
It is different sport to sport. There's not a general consensus.
We can agree on that.
But I do think that there's so little guaranteed that sometimes I think that we overstate the significance of a tank loss or that possibility, the percentage points. It doesn't guarantee you much. So I'll close with this paragraph from Lazarus, and this is great. It's time to get bold. It's time to get creative. It's time to start winning again. And this could go for the Blackhawks for a lot of teams. Because the current path is not just excruciating, it's extremely unlikely to work. History has shown us that. And it's better to aspire to be the Florida Panthers than risk becoming the Buffalo Sabres. Buffalo Sabres have gone 15 years, I think, since winning a playoff series or game or maybe getting there. It's just makes you wonder if all of the work. They have missed the playoffs. They're going to miss the playoffs for the 14th consecutive season. Oh, gosh. Are the Hawks on their way to that? Goodness sakes. That would be rough. So, that was a good story. Check it out. Mark Lazarus in The Athletic this morning talking about the Blackhawks trade. All right. When we come back, it's time for transition. It will be Marshall Harris, Dan Bernstein. Next, it's Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.